Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life as a dry millennial.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I have been alcohol-free for 305 days.
Hey, I'm Kaylee, and I have been alcohol-free for 13 months like a baby.
You're not a year and 1 month. You're 13 months.
Yeah, she's teething right now. She's about 13 months. I don't even know what...
Not sleeping through the night at all.
I'm trying to think, like, what do babies do?
So, November is one of my favorite months, Kaylee.
Because it's your birthday!
It's my birthday tonight at midnight. Also, tomorrow. I'll be 31, but November is also one of my favorite times of the year, just in general. I feel like I'm always hopping on some bandwagon in November. Like, I'm going to do 75 hard, or I'm going to do, you know, no drinking November.
Ooh, yeah.
Which I always lied about, which I think we've talked about before.
Yes. Well, there's like Sober October, which we just finished, and then New Year's resolutions, too. So...
Oh, yeah. So we're like right in the middle of all of it. Yeah. And I also feel like I'm willing to do a challenge this time of year, like anything to distract me from how depressing and gray it is outside.
Yeah, I get that.
So anyways, this month I am participating in No Shame November with Reframe App.
So what is that? For those of us who haven't finally bit the bullet and used code KATY, what?
No. Actually, you can participate in No Shame November and not even have Reframe App, which is dope. It's just they're running a campaign on Instagram right now. Like, how are you removing shame from the sober curious space? And so, yeah, there's like this really cool template that you can repost and just sharing ideas and things that you're doing to remove shame from the sober space.
I think that's awesome because there's so much shame around things I used to do while I was drinking, but then also some kind of newer shame around sobriety, right? And if you aren't necessarily following the classic AA program, or you're doing things a little bit differently, or you just want to cut back, then I don't know. Yeah, there's stuff around that too.
Exactly. And so I think that that's kind of what the campaign is aimed towards, is like, you know, we've talked about this before, like every day not drinking is better than a day drinking. And whether that's 3 days or 30 days or 3 years, like any stint you're doing towards sobriety and having like a conscious relationship with alcohol is better than none. And so I thought that No Shame November is much better than some of the other bullshit things I participated in November.
It's so crazy that you would be up for these workout challenges in November, or, you know, mental health challenges, things like that, when I associate with November is Thanksgiving and, yeah, being dead, being lazy, being super cold out. So...
Well, and I think that that is so funny because that kind of leads us into where this discussion is going today, in the sense that, like, I will literally do anything to distract myself for feeling ashamed of being lazy and not productive, which is like a full shame cycle as it is. So here we are, back to square one.
Katie, what did shame look like? I wanna cover the full evolution in this episode. Ooh. So going back to the roots when you were doing things like this. You know, you said you were doing it to escape some demons. So what were
the demons?
Tell me about your demon.
Okay. So shame is rooted in, there was like so much, especially in my drinking days. And a lot of the shame that pops up now for me when I'm sober comes from a lot of my choices then, you know, like those nights where you do blackout or half blackout, or you just like your inhibitions are gone. And so... Yeah. As I was saying before, it's hard to even remember because I spend so much time in this hyper diligent, like, cover up mode to forget and bury anything that's embarrassing for me because I'm so deeply ashamed. But the big things for me are lying while I was drinking or about my drinking, and then the poor decisions I was making while I was doing it.
So you've participated in like sober November or something like that, but then not gone through the full 30 days? Or what did the lying look like?
Yes. So that lying to my friends and family if I had been drinking before an event, lying about how long I had not drank for, because I saw my friends who were at least saying they were doing sober stints, but I don't know how many actually now that I kind of, you know.
It's everyone's just lying. They're like, yeah, I'm still going strong.
Yeah, so it would be, you know, the sober October and the, you know, not drinking in January. I would definitely lie about how long I'd lasted. And then I would be like, well, I lasted 5 days, so like I can have a drink now, you know, like rewarding myself and like giving myself an excuse for that, which I think that we all do. But I think that the lying like superseded any of that. It was like, you know, getting ready to go do something and chugging a beer in the bathroom because I didn't want Steve to know I needed to drink the beer before I went to the family event because it was so difficult for me to be there.
Yeah.
The feelings around it just weren't great. And then far before that, I mean, I was the token friend who would say, I'm going to the bathroom when we were out at the bar dancing. And I would be actually running to the bar and sneaking shots when my friends didn't know that I was doing that. So in therapy and in meditation and all of the things I'm doing now, a lot of that stuff is coming up. And I'm really just trying to, you know, be graceful with myself. However, I do have a pretty funny one. I have a next door neighbor and her and I have been known to slam White Claws here and there. And one time she came over to my house and she was like parked behind me and she was like, dude, what are all those cans on the side of your house?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, you mean my White Claw cemetery? And like, it just so happens that my husband doesn't park on that side of the house or see that side of the house ever. And so when I would get done with my beverage, I would just chuck it on the side of the fucking house. Like, and I just need to remind everyone, they're like, I'm a professional. I'm a 30-year-old adult. This was last year. This was not 10 years ago. You know, this was like very recent. Me not wanting to deal with my shit. Also, Steve never judged me for how much I was drinking, but I was so fearful of my own judgment that I like needed to do something bad to like, you know, litter on the side of my house, like throw fucking tall boys of White Claw over there to like hide it from everybody. But yeah, I definitely have some shame around my White Claw cemetery, but it always will serve for a good story. So
I definitely did some creative things where I lucked out because my partner usually drinks whiskey or beer and I drink wine. So because I was always really nervous about someone wanting some and me being like, oh, there's actually none left. Or, you know, like, hey, where'd all the beer in the six pack go? And, like, I drink it. I would always make sure I bought my own drinks or had my own drinks so that no one could really monitor how much I was drinking.
100%.
Yeah. And then if Danny came home and I didn't want him to see that I was, you know, drinking a bottle of wine or I don't know, I would like pour it into a coffee cup so that it was like, oh, I'm just having some tea. Like, so fucking stupid and not a good thing to do when you want to have trust and shit in a relationship. And like, he wouldn't have cared at all. It was all my own bullshit.
Shame.
Yeah, shame. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that that's the thing is that like when I was drinking, I was just like pushing that all in further and further and further and like, you know, tucking it away because if I'm the only one that knows about it, then I'm the only one that can experience it. And then I don't have to acknowledge it or take, what would I say, like, you know, accept it as my own, take responsibility for it.
Yeah, I want it to be something that I beat myself up about, but that no one else feels, I never want people to feel cringy or like embarrassed for me or get called out, right? No one wants that in any sort of situation.
No, especially when you're not ready to have that conversation, A, with yourself, and B, with anyone else. It's mortifying when you're not at that place, you know? Like, now I can laugh about it all I want, but like at the time, like, to anyone listening to this, and this is never means to sound preachy, but if anyone's listening to this and they're like, damn, I do that, take this as a sign to like, you're not alone. People are doing that, and it's okay, and you have the power to, you know, handle your shit.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the whole reasons for this podcast, even though we are not seasoned sobriety people.
We are seasoned sobriety people.
And see, that goes into a whole other shame thing about, like, being, you know, who am I to give someone advice, but really, it's being there so recently, and a lot of the stories that I share, I wish could be the ones that I'm like, oh yeah, I felt all this shame, I felt horrible, I was hiding these things from my partner, and so then that's when, but like, at that point, I still did not want to consider never drinking again.
Same.
That thought was still more depressing than what I was currently going through, because I honestly felt like I just didn't want to stop drinking, even though I knew all of the horrible things, because I thought that my life would be super boring without it. And I thought that I would be, you know, fucking lame. And so hopefully you get some encouragement from knowing that other people have kind of made it on the other side and are doing somewhat okay. You know, I feel like I'm thriving. I feel like I'm doing good.
Thriving at 30 sober.
Thriving in 30.
Yeah. And so I there's so many, like, drinking and driving. I touched on that last episode. I definitely did that more than I would like to say. And so this is actually, Kaylee, I don't think I may have shared this with you. I know I haven't on the podcast yet, but it's something I say often to people when they ask me why I quit drinking. Which is so loaded.
And I feel like you can give different answers depending on the person. Like, you could be like, oh, for, you know, you kind of want to feel it out to answer in whatever way would make them feel the most comfortable, which is stupid.
Yeah, I'm trying not to do that, but yes.
So what do you say?
So I say that I wasn't happy in my job that I took 2019, 2020, and it was mine and Steve's first year of being married, and I had a long commute home, and I would drive by the same Shell gas station every day, and I would stop there, and I would grab two of the big White Claws, and I was there at the same time as the construction workers from Bailey Hill that would be getting off work the same time I was every day.
Oh, yeah.
And we would straight up, like, say hi to each other, visit in line, because we had, like, that tight of a bond after stopping there for our after work booze.
Yeah.
And then I would get in my car, I would crack one open because it's like only a half mile from my house, and we would basically, like, cheers through, you know, the window and, like, drive home. And I was like, I did that like one too many times. And then one day I was like, I'm not going to take that way home. Like, I cannot drive by that Shell gas station.
Yeah.
And then I did anyways, and I stopped and I got my White Claws. And then I started making jokes with the cashier guy there. I was like, oh, I wonder how many people became alcoholics once White Claws hit the shelf. It's like, between COVID and White Claw, it was just like a recipe. So anyways, I'm really, I feel deep shame in my drinking and driving and ever putting other people in danger. Oh, and also spending money that I did not have on booze, especially in my early 20s. Oh my God, I made so much money at my jobs then, Kaylee.
I would have a sick retirement.
Totally.
I'd be so good if I didn't drop like $20 to $30 a night just getting well drinks, but like five of them.
Dude. Yeah. And like pulling out my credit card because I had nothing left in my checking account. Cause I was like, yeah, I can totally afford to like go out and pay for this and then eat at midnight and then wallow all day the next day and buy food again all day because I'm so hungover.
Yeah, I've definitely been at a place where I've spent like my last $6 in my checking account on alcohol, especially when I first moved to Portland and I was lonely. And yeah, it was like sometimes I wouldn't. Oh, I had a really bad habit of not eating dinner and then just getting really drunk instead. I don't know. I was really obsessed with that shit. So I would not eat dinner and then I would drink an entire bottle of wine and then I would throw up.
Okay, and I want to say that, like, already we've got, you know, I don't know, we're, like, 20 minutes in this episode, and it's so heavy, and I just want to, like, tell everyone, like, I am trying to be as light as I can, but also, it's just hard to laugh about, because when you're talking about it, and you're repeating it out loud, you're like, holy shit, I know I am not the only one that felt this way and did these things. And so, anyways, that's just my two cents, because I don't want anyone to think that we're fucking downers, but this shit is real, so.
Well, and I think it can never be all sunshine and rainbows. I mean, this episode is probably going to hit a little harder maybe than some other ones, but when we're talking about, you know, quitting a super addictive substance that you know, literally ruins people's lives, I don't know, it's a shitty substance, and it's hard to not come across as preachy in that way, but it fucking kills people, and it's a horrible drug, and so there's going to be some negative things that are associated with that, and some reasons why we didn't want to participate in that lifestyle anymore, right? So, downer.
Dude, we're so bad. How do you feel right now, Kaylee?
I feel like I'm fucking bombing over here. Fuck me. I keep losing my words.
Dude, I feel the same. I just feel like every time I open my mouth, I'm like literally so depressing. Okay, Kaylee. What are some things that you are fucking embarrassed about and bring you shame?
Oh, my God. Well, I think especially as we go through these, Katie and I are both totally fine. We are in therapy and we have, you know, successful, happy lives, I would say. So even if some of these past stories freak you out a little bit or might whatever, hopefully the worst is behind us. But I was a huge puker, which basically just means that I was drinking to the point of giving myself alcohol poisoning.
I cannot. Just so everyone knows, I've been trying to, like, contain my laughter. I've been cry laughing over this entire episode in my palms, just right below my mic. Okay, anyways, drinking to the point of alcohol poisoning, Kaylee, go.
Yeah, so I wouldn't eat, and I used to do this thing that was, you know, when I was in a bad mood, or I was upset, or I had a period of time where I was working at a mall, like underground, the Pioneer Square Mall. I worked at the Aldo there, and there was literally like no natural sunlight, all fluorescent lights. And then I was doing a internship at the same time at the event planning company. So I think if I would have stuck through it all the way, I would have had 3 months of having no days off. But I think I only made it like 1.5 or 2. So I had absolutely no days off, but was still like barely making enough money to cover rent. And I would go outside, even on my balcony, even when it was freezing, and I would write in my diary or drunk dial my friends and just drink wine and chain smoke cigarettes out there. And so there was one time where I think I was drunk dialing Ashley and was just talking to her. She was like, "Are you drunk, dude?" And I was like, "Yeah." She was like, "Yeah, okay, what time is it?" And I threw up on the balcony, and our balcony is at an angle, so not only did the vomit start to like go down to the first floor neighbors, but the wine bottle got knocked over and rolled and crashed on the balcony of my neighbor, who was, we have a good relationship now, but I was very terrified. So I ran down and like cleaned it up in the middle of the night, and it was fine. Yeah, one time I threw up alone on New Year's at Roadside Attraction, which is this bar in Portland. I spent like my last $6 on a PBR and a shot of whiskey, and it just didn't hit me right, or I didn't have enough dinner. And they have these like little corner kind of seating areas, and I just threw up in one of those and then just walked away and laughed.
Can I just say that it's really funny? Kaylee and I have been friends for 10 years, and I did not know that.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that when you moved to Portland, like, you'd been drinking more, but I didn't. You know what I mean? It's like, I think sometimes we feel like the things we're ashamed of and embarrassed by and our habits are, like, they're under a magnifying glass to us, but not to other people.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's probably a lot of people wondering, like, why is this person quitting drinking? Like, they don't have a problem or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I thankfully never hurt myself or anyone else to, you know, besides my like ego and my pride. But yeah, you don't talk about those things because you are really ashamed. And I think that it would make people feel a lot better. Maybe hopefully me embarrassing myself on this podcast makes you feel better. But yeah, it was wild. It was wild for a little while.
I remember as I started to like calm down on the party scene and Steve and I were getting more serious, like I would use excuses of like bachelor night to just like get hammed in my later 20s. And I remember that I have lied at so many jobs about why I can't go to work the next day because of drinking too much wine the night before. Like so many jobs.
I had a time when I was working at the hair salon that I went out with people from the salon. And I think I had a fake ID at the time. I don't think I was like of drinking age. And my manager saw me out and I called her and I was like, dude, I am so sorry. I'm not going to make an excuse up for you. You saw me out last night. I was trashed. Is there any way you can cover my shift? And she did. And she's fucking awesome.
Aw, yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah, I had people looking out, but
I just straight up lied and like horrible things I would make up. Horrible things I'd make up to get out of my shifts.
Okay, and then you're worried that they're gonna come true. Like my grandpa's sick, and then you're like, oh my God, did I just kill my grandpa by lying?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like I failed the universe's, you know, opportunity to be a good person, and so now it's paying me back.
Final destination.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, that like wraps up my drinking shame. Oh my gosh, that was so much, Kaylee.
I know. I could really just keep going, but
yeah.
I think we should move on because it was a little depressing.
Yes.
Just a little. It's fine. It's good. Because now, okay, so now
we get to talk about good shame.
Oh wait, no, this is still what shame are you working through now that you are sober? Has the things that you feel ashamed about changed, or yeah, what sort of shit's going on in your head now?
Yeah, well, okay, so this is a theme in my life. Feeling the need to be productive. Like I find,
yes,
I experience like, you know, deep shame in idle hands. And that has so much to do with, you know, experiences and trauma in the household growing up. And I don't think it's just me. I think that's a collective shame we feel, like our society as a whole. And so that's not special to me.
Yeah, it's has a lot to do with capitalism, too.
For sure. Just, for sure.
You know, where our worth is based on how productive we can be is
right.
Crazy.
So, and then this kind of rolls into that. I'm currently experiencing shame or fear of saying no. Actually, right at this moment, I received a group message from family members asking to throw a group birthday party for me on Saturday, which is in 4 days, and I absolutely cannot make it. And my daughter has volleyball games. We have plans, like me and my husband and my daughter, to do things to celebrate that night, and they're set in stone. And I just am like shaking about saying no because I'm like, oh, they are doing it for me, but like, really? That's not. I can't go. I'm not going. And if you want to do something for my birthday, like message me and let's make a plan together. You know, that's my time. That's my weekend time. And that's just kind of how I feel. And I'm really leaning into that. And I feel like sometimes like that doesn't all like always get respected because I am such a yes person. And I'm just trying to go away from that.
Yeah, I totally can feel for you with that because it's really hard to set those boundaries and not everyone is always going to respect them or they might get their feelings hurt. But you have to remind yourself that you can't control people's feelings.
Right. And no one's doing it to make me feel bad. But like, I just can't imagine, you know, doing that for someone else's birthday. So anyways, so yeah, that shame and fear of saying no is really deeply rooted in me. I'm a people pleaser. That's, you know, my ego wants to keep me safe by, you know, saying like, you need these people. So just say yes, just say yes, just say yes. But really, those people love me, even if I say no, and I set those boundaries to protect my energy. And so I'm really, really working on that.
And people who don't respect your boundaries, not to cut you off, but I did, and I'm sorry. But people who don't respect your boundaries aren't, I don't know, it gets so hard and complicated with family and shit, but, you know, kick them to the curb.
Yeah. Or, you know, yeah. And like just knowing what your non-negotiable boundaries are and what your negotiable boundaries are. So.
Okay. So that's a word that you mentioned that I am trying to figure out right now with me is what my non-negotiables are.
Yes.
And I haven't had to think about that or really ever put myself first in that way. And so I'm trying to come up with a list of what mine are. And Katie, I think you should list some for people that are listening. And I want people to comment on Dry Hard Pod with what their non-negotiables are, because I could use some ideas.
Yes, I love that. Yeah. So non-negotiables for me, and there can be, you know, several types, but really for me, my physical and mental and emotional health are all the same. So my non-negotiables, they apply to all three categories. So I think that's an important thing is to like the things that are non-negotiables for you should hit all three or you should be benefiting from all of them. So, okay. So my non-negotiables are 8 hours of sleep. So tonight we're going to get off of our recording about like 9:30 probably, I imagine, and I will head straight to bed after washing my face. So two things right there: 8 hours of sleep, non-negotiable, washing my face before bed. Like if I skip my nighttime skincare routine, it's just like not drinking, I have inserted skincare, and we've talked about that, you and I.
Yeah.
And so those are my two things. So that hits like my mental health, my physical health, and my emotional health, getting that 8 hours of sleep, washing my face, and then exercise. So Steve and I both, regardless of what's happening in our days and in our schedules, we do not cancel our exercise time to make plans to do other things. So our family and friends know that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we go to the gym. We don't cancel that. However, I will go at 5 a.m. if I really want to do something going on that night. But that time, that hour of putting myself first, my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health first is really, really important to me. I think that those are my top three. And then I also meditate 2 times a week. So finding that silent time and really just making sure that everyone in my household knows that that time, that, you know, 45 minutes is reserved for silence in this whole house. And then now the podcast too. So I think that those are like, I have like 5 things about my weekly routine that are really just not up for debate to anybody. And if someone gets to get in the way of that, you can fuck right off.
I think what I struggle with too sometimes is even setting those boundaries with myself, right? Like,
yes, yeah.
One of my things has been trying to be to go to bed at a decent time so that I can wake up early, because I know that even when I'm at my most depressed and it's the absolute hardest thing to do, that I am more productive at work. I have a better, more productive work day, which, you know, shouldn't be the end all be all, and it's not, but I also just have such a better mood and a better attitude and have the ability to kind of just be at a better base level of a human being if I work out in the morning. Because then I don't have the weight and the guilt and the shame of not doing it all day, weighing over my shoulders, and then trying to do it after work when I'm emotionally exhausted. I've been context shifting all day. I've been in multiple meetings, and it's now cold and dark, and all I want to do is watch TV and eat and go to bed. I don't have to then because I've already done it in the morning. And so,
well,
but it's hard to let myself go to bed early because I want to stay up. So
sorry, I don't want to cut you off. But what I was going to say with that is I know ultimately if I have that discipline during the week that I can have those times and more time, honestly, to just fuck off. If that makes sense. Like if I am doing that every night and I'm pushing my bedtime back and I'm pushing my bedtime back and I'm saying, oh, I'm not going to work out. I'll do it later. Or, no, I'm not going to do this. It honestly, ultimately takes time away from that chosen time that's allotted for myself and that, you know, that type of self-care, which I also need. I also want to, oh my gosh, Saturdays and Sundays and Friday nights, I stay up until midnight. I eat whatever I want. I watch whatever I want. I usually don't do anything good for my brain. You know, I can't say that my non-negotiables are every day, but what I can say is that each week there's three solid days or nights that are dedicated to those things. And if I follow those rules, those 3 days, then the other 4 days can be more fluid and I can kind of rearrange them and prioritize other needs.
I love that. I feel like our friend Ashley, who we've mentioned maybe almost in every podcast. Hey, she would, because she was my roommate for a while, she lived with me, and I have a really hard time with enjoying a clean house. And when I do want to fuck off, I want to fuck off in a clean house. And I am very disorganized in my personal life. I misplace things all the time. I can never find my keys or my AirPods or my phone charger. And she phrased it as like, it sucks to have to, you know, clean the dishes or, you know, just like rinse them out before, you know, just stuff like that for some reason is so hard for me. And she phrased it as hooking up your future self. And that resonated with me a lot of like, okay, if I do these things this week, I get to hook up my future self. But I also don't want to always be looking forward to the weekends. Yeah, I don't know. It's all about balance. And I have a hard time with that. So,
yeah, no, it is. And I don't always do a good job at those things. Like, they're non-negotiables, but that's not to say that life doesn't throw you, you know, throw a wrench in your plans here and there. But it's interesting because you know what the thing is that I skip the most?
What?
Meal prepping.
Yeah, but that wasn't as your three. That wasn't listed as your top three.
It's not. I want to integrate it though. Like, I talked about that. I have preached nutrition and whole foods and just eating intuitively for so long. And it's something I'm really bad at. And so I want to be very transparent to anyone listening that, like, yes, I have these non-negotiables. And yes, I believe in routine, but I really struggle in feeding myself. And it's not for anything else other than a biggest thing that you'll hear me say ever. I'm not stepping into my self-worth, right? Like, I'm not stepping into it and doing it, but even though I deserve it, because it's hard for me to acknowledge that. B, because I'm fucking lazy and I'm spending too much time like taking baths and lighting candles and journaling, but I also want to do those things, you know? Yeah. And so, but I just want to say that like, it does feel impossible to do everything. And if there are any if there are any full-time moms or dads listening to this, like, I don't know how any of you do it because I have, you know, Iris every other week and I work full-time and I've got lots of things, my hands in different things. And but balance is hard.
Yeah, I have no kids and I work from home and I'm still so overwhelmed by all of the things that I want to do versus the things that I have energy to do. Right. So that's something I have shame around, is feeling like I'm not living up to my potential.
Well, that's something else to touch on. And I think that there is this whole, like, you know, era of work from home, which I always say I would love to do. I want to do that. I can't wait to do that. I'm so excited to do that. But I don't know if I would have the self-control. Like, it would be hard for me to turn off the TV or set my phone down or stay focused on one task at a time. So like, I tip my hat to everyone that's doing that too. I think it's really also hard to take your work hat off. People feel a lot of shame around having boundaries with work when they're working from home. And I know that's something you've struggled with too.
Yeah, it's really easy when you're already on the couch to just sit on the couch and work an additional 2 hours. And then you don't realize that the burnout is happening until it catches up with you and it's almost like too late. You're like, oh shit, I worked 3 10-hour days in a row and I don't take a lunch because I just make food really quick and then I sit on my couch and I eat it. And that's, yeah, it's funny. I think maybe some people's experience with people working from home is that they're, I don't know, taking advantage of it. But I've worked more than I ever have through COVID while also staring at everything that's messy and everything that's shitty and not being able to touch it is hard. So,
yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I would struggle with that. Like, I'm very much so if my space is not organized and clear, it's difficult for me to focus. I think that's a little ADD that kicks in there. I have read some articles that this is the era like of the work from home and people are literally taking their stuff and going to Starbucks and going to a coffee shop and like removing themselves from their household to get work done.
Yeah, that's a good call. I've done that before. I mean, I used to do that when I was in college. I would go to Cafe Roma or I would go somewhere and I'd go study. And I really like doing that. So that's a good alternative too, because I don't have to be there for a super long time. But if I feel like I'm not getting good focus, then I can bail and go somewhere for a couple hours and then come
back. Yes. So another tip that I have for anyone who's like wanting to add some non-negotiables into their schedule and to like really practice discipline now so you can have ultimate fuck off time later. I tell myself, I physically say out loud, you deserve to do this right now so that you can have time for yourself later. You know what I mean? Like you physically say it out loud, like you deserve to do this right now. And I just like, say it and say it and say it. And sometimes I do it and sometimes I don't. So
yeah,
here we are. So, okay, sorry. I just got off on like a very large tangent. Kaylee, what's some shame that you're working through now that you're sober?
Oh, I am working through still a lot of the anxiety stuff. And I think some of that has gotten even a little bit harder. I also have a lot of weird things with how much I want to talk about my situation with anxiety and depression. And that is a thing for me. And I try and be really, you know, as vocal as I can be about it and like end the stigma on mental health. But sometimes like I just recently started a new medication that's adding to my existing medication that I take. And I was looking at like all of these bottles of pills and I was like, oh shit, am I crazy? Or, you know, like being like, oh, I am severely mentally ill. And I, you know, I joke about it and I use humor to kind of cope with that. But sometimes I get embarrassed about that. But really, like, I don't know, I should be proud that I'm taking the steps to improve my mental health. And that was a huge reason why I wanted to quit drinking. So if these pills are working for me, you know, not everyone needs them to get by, but
you do.
I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And not being ashamed for getting the help that you need. Like sometimes, you know, therapy works for a lot of people and that's awesome. Especially if you find a type of therapy that you really resonate with. But, and I think there's, you know, oh, having to be on a medication and then you're going to get hooked on the medication. And there's so much distrust with pharmaceuticals and shit like that. And so sometimes I'm embarrassed that I can't just like that. I have to take drugs in order to like be okay.
Don't be ashamed, but yes. And I know that saying that doesn't help, but I want you to know that. But like, I don't judge you, Kaylee.
Yeah. And I think if more people were like, I'm on Lexapro, or like what you were talking about, Katie, with your drinking stories and how you tell different people different things.
Yeah.
I can tell people that I quit drinking because I didn't like the way that it made me feel and that I really wanted to focus on my mental and physical health through COVID so that I could have something that I could control that was positive. And those things are all true. But a big thing is that like, oh, I'm on, you know, I think because people in my life or family members used to always call it crazy pills, right? Like,
oh, there's just so much stigma around it.
Then they'll put you on crazy pills. It was always like a kind of almost a threat. And so,
yeah, if you bring up things that are difficult for you, then I'm going to have to get you some help.
Yeah. Or like, if you don't stop this like emo shit, we're going to put you in the Johnson unit sort of thing, you know?
No, Kaylee, I'm so sorry.
You know, everyone was dealing with the tools that they had at the moment. But where I was going with this was that, yeah, you shouldn't be ashamed if you need medication to make you feel better. And I wouldn't tell people that the huge reason why I, when I wanted to improve my mental health, is my drugs don't work if I drink alcohol.
Yeah, yes.
And it sucks, and we hate to hear it. And I've been on these drugs for way longer than I've been sober.
Yeah, well, and that's something that, like, we've talked about, where, like, it even feels like doctors aren't talking to us about those things.
No, my doctor recently asked, when I was telling her I wanted to try this new medication, she was asking about how many drinks I typically have on average a week. And I was like, oh, I'm actually, you know, haven't had any alcohol for like about a year and a month. And she was like, oh, okay, good. And just like moved on.
She wasn't like, good, your medication's probably working.
Yeah. She wasn't like, that's great, because you're not supposed to. No doctor's ever told me that I'm not supposed to drink on these pills. I have to read the fine print that's on the side of the bottle, that's literally like, do not mix this with alcohol. And I thought it meant like, don't mix it with alcohol and then drive, because you might be more fucked up than you think you are. But it's really like, these just won't even do the job.
At one point in my life, I thought that meant that, like, don't mix it up and cut together and drink it.
Don't make some fucking crazy ass like pharmaceutical.
No, I'm being serious, Keely. I genuinely thought that when I was a kid. Like, I would read that, like, don't mix with alcohol. I'm like, why would someone mix this in with alcohol? That's so weird.
That's so cute.
I know. Yeah. Well, that is why we're participating in this No Shame November, man. Like, we're talking about the shit, because if we don't, who's gonna?
Yeah, it is. It's such an uncomfortable topic.
And it can be sad.
Yeah, but I think hopefully one of the goals of it is, the more you talk about it, the more other people feel like they're not alone. So, yeah.
I've never taken any antidepressant or anxiety medication, but I told myself that when I hit a year sober, and this, like, no one needs to do this, like, you should get help when you feel like you need help. So don't, this is not something that anyone else should do. But I decided that if my mental health has not improved, especially in the anxiety realm, that I will be seeking, you know, some guidance in that from a mental health professional, from someone who has a PhD and not just from an Instagram account. So I should probably get on a list, because that's coming up. January 1st will be a year that I've been sober. So that's like my goal. I'm like, okay, if I can spend a year sober and like acknowledge some of the shit that my drinking was probably pushing off, and I'm still feeling this way, then I'm going to ask, you know?
Yeah, ask for help or reach out and get help. I actually, when I had Kaiser for health insurance, started seeing someone there for wanting to quit alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
When I did, I think, like 200 days. And then after, and he was like a counselor, and he helped me list out my goals. And he was like a separate from my therapist. I was seeing someone who was like a drug and alcohol counselor.
Yeah. How did you feel about that?
It was interesting to have to get, like, I had to get a pee test. I had to do like a drug test. And I think so much of it was revolved. Why can't I do words? Was revolved around. Yes. People who were court mandated to be there.
Yeah.
So I felt shame going there. I felt shame, like, being in the same, which, like, there's nothing wrong with those people either. we're all fucking just trying to figure out how to not drink anymore because it's impacted our lives negatively in some way, right? Feeling shame about something and then feeling shame about feeling judgment, like putting judgment on other people as part of that shame.
Yeah. And well, and this topic comes up a lot in the sober space, Kaylee. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. But like, there is no pissing contest for the lowest rock bottom or the lowest low or who's the drunkest. Like, that shouldn't exist. So like, you feeling that way is problematic as a whole, but it's really common in the sober space.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works.
Yeah, like, okay, so example, because I don't know if that came across correctly, but like, my dad was like, who's an alcoholic and who's been sober for 10 years, was like, you know, I used to say that you weren't a real alcoholic, but then I realized that it's good that you quit before you're a real alcoholic, because then that's how people become real alcoholics.
Yeah, and you're just an alcoholic in training.
Yes, I'm like, that makes no fucking sense, but okay, I'm glad that we, you know, it kind of got that far into it, but it's like, I would lose everything at the age of 50 if I hadn't stopped at 30.
Yeah.
Like, I believe that.
Yeah, I don't think that I would ever be able to reach the goals that I have for myself or be the best version of myself if I would have kept drinking. And with,
yep,
there were some, you know, because I already have depression and alcohol exacerbates that, there were some spooky times that and your inhibitions are lowered and shit like that. So yeah, it's better to quit while you're ahead
or behind.
I think at least our livers have a little bit of a chance to repair, hopefully.
Yeah. And like, when I still have some neuroplasticity left in my brain.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I always forget about the actual like killing of brain cells and all that crazy shit that happens.
Yeah. And then like, just being sober long enough at a young enough age where I can rewrite some of those habits. And, you know, it's like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and that applies to sobriety and mental health. Like, I think that the older you get, the more and more difficult it becomes to come away from those same processes and reactions. And so I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you stop recognizing, at least at the amount that I was drinking, I would stop remembering what made my body feel like shit. You know, like, you eat a bunch of fast food and are hungover for so long that it just becomes your resting state. And it's only when you pull yourself out of that, or allow yourself to be pulled out of that for a little bit, that you realize how your new, you know, I hate saying the word new normal, but
the new normal,
your shit can feel better on a daily basis, even if it isn't perfect, but your kind of base level improves in terms of just how your body feels, how you feel mentally. And it's hard to really explain that to folks who are still in it, I think.
Right. I think that also applies outside of just like drinking and having bad drinking habits. Just in general, when we're not taking care of ourselves, it's so easy to forget what taking care of yourself feels like, because you've just been in this low and just in this like shitty feeling for so long, you know?
Yeah.
I was going to piggyback a little bit, because sometimes I feel like on the podcast, the fifth episode, we can get in this pattern about me talking about like all of the positive things I'm doing in my sobriety. And something that I feel pretty deep shame about is how easy and successful sobriety has been for me. Which I'm just realizing again sounds fucking ridiculous, but
no, I get that though, because I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yes. So like, it's great, but things are hard for me also. But because I'm genuinely the type of person that I have a fair, I think that like my feel good hormones are pretty leveled out. And so I don't really experience a ton of like up and down feelings. I have been able to carry out like a pretty solid state during sobriety. And the fact, like the actual act of drinking, just is, I sound so, it, I don't even have an inkling of want to do that. But what's been harder is feeling accomplished and feeling like I am coming full circle with my goals, I have some shame over like being shallow and being busy and people thinking that I just, you know, do this and this and this and that and that. And then like, oh, well, you know, so much of that's rooted in performance and like goes back to my inner child wound and a lot of the expectations that I feel like were put on me at a young age. And so a lot of that is rooted in shame and the reason why I do it.
Yeah, it's so easy how quickly we can discredit the things that we are doing to benefit ourselves in our own lives. Because I do that all the time where I am beating myself up for not working out 5 days a week, for, you know, skipping a session at the climbing gym, for eating something that I don't think aligns with what my goals are with nutrition. And I sometimes have to take a step back and be like, oh, at least I'm not, you know, binge drinking every night anymore. And that's huge.
Yeah.
But I skip right over it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but you're smoking weed too much now. And you've been watching a lot of trash TV. And I think you should really be like doing your Duolingo or watching a documentary or something instead, or reading more. So there's always shit to beat yourself up about, and it's really easy for me to find the next thing.
Ah, dude, same. So sometimes on the weekends when I have all this free time and I've like stuck to my non-negotiables, I like have this moment where I can't even be present and enjoy relaxing because I'm so busy thinking about the next thing that I can be doing.
I'm the exact same way, and I think sometimes why I don't hook my future self up is the thought of spending a day alone with nothing that I have to do. I love it when it happens, but sometimes when I'm like unhealthy, I feel like I get really bored and really depressed easily. And so finding things to entertain myself and take myself on a date or just let the day happen as it comes has been something I've had to ease into a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I get that. I can be really... Expectations is another topic that we'll hit in another episode, because I think that that has a whole, its own whole thing. But but sometimes I get hyper controlling over my days and my time because I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to fit in every single self-help and exercise or hike or cleaning event, like, or socializing event that I'm going to do. And so I can just be a fucking control freak, man. So I get kind of that like manic, like type A situation sets in and it can ruin my time by myself.
I hear that.
Yeah. 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 So Kaylee.
So Katie.
What can we do? Give me two things we can do this month in No Shame November to remove shame from the sober space.
Okay, so things that I am working on, we covered. Things that I am doing right now actively to try and combat some of those feelings of shame that I do still have. I had to get over it being so cheesy. And I don't say it out loud, but I do talk to myself like I'm babysitting a younger version of myself. So I feel like I have this attitude towards a lot of other people in my life, but I don't treat myself this way of just being like, hey, are you hungry? Do you want a snack? Like, oh yeah, bud, like rough day, huh? Like, should we take a nap? Do we want to take like a 30-minute nap? And just being really nice to myself and kind of talking to myself as if I'm a little baby.
Dude, yes.
So that's been helpful to just be like, hey, it's okay. It's okay. Today sucked. That's cool. We want to take a nap? Right on. Do we think that we could do the dishes before we take a nap?
No? Okay.
Sweet? Yeah? No? Okay. Yeah. It's like, how bad is it going to be today? Like, oh, no? Do you want to eat a chocolate bar and take a nap? All right. That's cool.
Yeah. What about you, Katie? Well, one thing that I do for myself to really work on the things that I'm feeling shameful of is recognizing that the things I'm ashamed of are a reflection of parts of myself that were harmed or damaged during like development as a kid and as a teen.
Yeah.
And so really, like, trying to say, no, like, you're loved here, right? Like, you are a part of me. You, those parts of myself and the way that I feel about myself, they can exist here. I am more than just that. You know, giving them, like, room to breathe. But then, you know, like you said, just coaching myself my way through it. And then just putting that energy back out there, giving other people the licensing to be kind to themselves. And when I have a friend that tells me no or doesn't want to do something or isn't up to it, accepting that and telling them I love them. And I think that that's something that I needed to hear more of and that I hope that I get to hear more of from the people in my life. And they hear me when I'm setting these boundaries because it's what's best for me.
That's, I don't know, that's huge. Setting boundaries is hard, and it's something that I am working through as well. But just reminding myself that I love myself. It sounds so like,
I'm gonna cry.
It's so hard. That's been something I've struggled with my entire life, is low self-esteem and really low confidence and thinking that I'm
the biggest loser.
A big fucking loser. So.
Yes.
And that's not to say I haven't had moments where I've been like, I look good today. I'm feeling myself. But in general, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I let people treat me in a way that I wouldn't treat others, and not as much anymore. I'm getting better about it, but just being like, in order to be nice to myself and in order to value myself and to do what I want to do, this is not something I'll be participating in, and whatever the repercussions of that with how people feel, like if they want to feel some type of way because I'm saying no to going to doing something or whatever, that's fine, because at the end of the day, like, it's all about
you.
Yeah. And it, speaking of shame around being a narcissist, I always thought really negatively about people that came across as super confident or cocky. Maybe it was because of the way my parents talked about them or whatever. Always being worried that I would be cringe. Like if I was confident but actually looked stupid, then that would be the worst thing in the world. And so it's better to just be self-deprecating always, because then you're letting people know that you're in on the joke before they can talk about you behind your back, right?
Yeah, I feel that. I definitely feel that. I think that it's easier to do that too than to put yourself out there and
be vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think that what happens, I mean, I have no problem sharing, but when I'm sharing, I'm in control of the narrative, and that's storytelling. That's not being vulnerable in my, for me, because I'm good at it.
Yeah, I used to think that I was really good about being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you just say a bunch of things that are TMI, but...
Yes. And so, exactly. That's like, 2 years ago, I would have never acknowledged my fucking White Claw graveyard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's hard for me to talk about. I'm a mom and a partner and a successful person, and I love myself. And I can also have those things that I'm ashamed of. And I will also say that, I had it and then I just let it go.
One thing that we should be proud of ourselves for, Katie, while you're trying to remember that thought, is we were both so brain dead. We released an episode on Sunday, which was later. So we've just been running around like crazy, kind of trying to catch up. And we really did want to commit to this podcast and releasing it once a week. But it means that sometimes we have to kind of power through it, right? To hook up our future selves.
Yes, and that's such a good point.
So
I know that I'm going to feel better coming away from recording tonight, even though it's not something that I necessarily had the space for before sharing.
Same.
Yeah. So for anyone listening, this is also super time consuming, but we love it. And this is what we're doing. This is the energy we're putting out there to hopefully help relieve people from some shame that they're feeling around what they did while they're drinking or now that they're sober and working on their shit.
definitely, this could have been a super long episode, especially with just trying to get your thoughts together and sometimes thinking like, oh, okay, this is what I'm going to talk about. And then realizing as you're saying shit out loud, like, oh shit, right? Like, I can't just talk about the bright, shiny spots of like being sober now and how cool it is and how great I am. I have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, some of the reasons why I decided to become sober were not great, but that's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah. We've all done shit we're not proud of, and we all, you know, make it out the other side and hopefully can, I don't know, treat other people with empathy that we're all fucking learning as we go. We don't know what we're all doing here.
We're all in this together.
We're all in this together. Yes, that's a better way of putting my...
Except for some of us have access to therapy in a fucking doctor's office and others do not.
Yeah, which is
huge.
I hate that. I hate that.
I know. Just another downer for the night.
Yeah. Well, Katie's been using an app, a therapy and meditation app that she really likes.
Oh, okay. So this is not a plug. Because I'm making no money off of talking about this. Not that I make much money off of Reframe anyways, but I do love Reframe. I'm just going to put that out there. I've been using this meditation and manifestation program called To Be Magnetic. If you do one thing for yourself today, just go follow them on Instagram. I just love their fucking quotes. Like, their little pieces of wisdom that they drop always seem to resonate with me. And yeah, it's just great. It really takes like... It's manifestation, but it takes like the woo out of it and really just applies psychology and like practice into a daily meditation to, you know, broaden your horizons and attract and bring in what you want for your life. And I think that that's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. I love that there's an easy solution of following people on Instagram, especially for people like me that always think that I don't have time. That's an excuse I use a lot, that I don't have time to prioritize the things that matter to me because I don't often set boundaries or hook my future self up or apply my own boundaries to myself with going to bed early, right? But you can follow some people on Instagram that motivate you while you're kind of tuning out and scrolling, especially with all the crazy shit on social media that makes me feel shame, makes me feel bad about myself.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that is something else that's really helped my mental health is my Instagram feed is flooded with now like sober, curious, mental health, like good, real quality lifestyle content. And I'm so happy that way.
Yeah.
I don't need to follow things that don't make me feel good anymore. So my friend and my co-parent Alex said to me one time, social media is your house, so you get to decide what comes in and what goes out. And so anything that's not serving you should not be in your house.
I love that. I definitely need to go through and do a purge and do some unfollowing of things. There's some alcohol content or just things that are like, how drunk am I going to get tonight or whatever? And I'm like,
Yeah. Or we've talked about too, like the super unrealistic lifestyle accounts that are like, just make your life better. Just get up earlier every day and just do all the things. And you're like, no, fuck off. That doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah. You have to manifest your life. I wake up every day and have a lemon water and it's like, yes, I want to be that person. Yes. Yeah. But also like, no, because
you're not giving me actionable steps.
And I always am back and forth between having these huge unrealistic standards for myself and then being like, fuck it. And I'm trying to find the balance.
Yes.
I'm trying to find the balance. So if if I fail at waking up every day at 6 a.m. and working out and having my lemon water and taking all of my vitamins and all of my pills and, you know, having a really productive day at work and then, you know, ending it with like a movie with the fireplace on and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not doing that. Then I'm literally fucking off in the other direction and just laying on the couch all day. So I have to not be in that black and white thinking.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's hard not to be, especially with the age of social media. And then I read something else that I loved and it was like, it works both ways. Like, I want to unfollow anything that does not bring me joy or like add to my life as I'm scrolling. And If unfollowing me helps someone else's mental health and their day, then I fucking hope they do it.
Yeah.
I think that so many people are so attached to that idea that, like, I'm for everyone. Everyone should enjoy my content. I hope that everyone watches. It's like, no, actually, fucking do not. Like, don't. If you don't like my sober content, that is okay. Like, if you don't want to listen to the podcast, that is also okay. This idea that we need to be loved and accepted by everyone is why we feel such shame in saying no and being rejected. And we have that fear. And I just feel like we don't lean into that enough. Like, no, we have our people, and that group of people ebbs and flows and changes all the time. And I think that's important.
I've heard people put it so simply of just, I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea.
Oh, yeah.
And being okay with that. And I'm like, oh, I want everyone to like me.
Dude, that's like my biggest fear. And I don't know if anyone has really caught on yet, but like, and I don't know if we've really talked about it, but our podcast name, like Dry Hard Pod, Kaylee and I both identify as like, I've always tried really hard to convince people to like me or to try to be cool.
Yeah, change my personality, just like tweak it a little bit depending on what type of group or people I'm hanging out with so that I'm, you know, fitting in better.
Anyways, I think that we're going to wrap up.
Let's do it. Let's wrap it up. Hopefully we left you with some more good feelings than
bad feelings. Yeah. Ultimately, we are just trying to take charge of our lives and be in control and remind ourselves that we are doing our best. And sometimes that's a deep breath. Sometimes that's Kaylee giving her little self a pep talk, like, meet your needs wherever they are, and you're a badass.
Yeah. Also, I hope that if you want more horror stories, hit me up depending on my mood. Maybe I'll tell you. But if you are curious about exploring a different type of relationship with alcohol, maybe one where you're cutting back, maybe one where you're deciding not to drink anymore at all, if I can do it, it is 100% possible for you. And we've got your back.
Yeah, for sure. And message us. Like, I am in the Instagram, the Dry Hard Pod Instagram all day because I'm fucking addicted to my phone, which is also something I feel deep shame over. But I'm here for that. We love it.
Yeah. If there's any subjects that you want us to talk about, definitely hit us up at Dry Hard Pod.
We have 7 5-star ratings now. Wow.
Ooh, that's fancy.
Good night, y'all.
Good night. Bye.